Hi folks, thank you once again and as always for downloading the It's Not All About Me podcast, a podcast featuring a guy with ME and a microphone, and that's me, Paddy. I hope you've had a good week. I took another week off last week. I tried to cover up the... I didn't kind of say, oh, I'm taking a week off. On Twitter, I just posted all the previous episodes that have featured guests on a different day. And kind of, I hope got away with it. I'm not sure. Apologies if you were waiting for an episode and one never came. You know how this illness is. I'm kind of stubbornly sticking to an idea that I never take 2 weeks in a row off. But hey, you know how, you know, trying for consistency goes with MECFS. But that's a name, you know. But we're back here. And look, it's ME Awareness Week. That's pretty special. It's a special time, actually, for me. No joking, you know. I'll talk about that in a minute. Thank you very much for all the feedback on the previous episode, whenever we talked about how to answer the surprisingly complex question, how you doing? If you haven't heard it, maybe go back and listen to that. I got quite a few responses from people about how they deal with that question, and I think if you look at the size of the file you just downloaded or the length of the show that you're streaming, you'll see that this is quite a long one. We do have a guest on today, which I'm really eager to get to because that was a fantastic chat with the author and all-round fabulous person, Katie King. We will get to that very soon, and I kind of don't want to spend too long, so I won't talk about the feedback from last week's episode this week, but we'll do it next week when we don't have a guest on. But yeah, well, I probably should talk a little bit about Awareness Week. Awareness Week, it used to be kind of, for the last few years before this year, this is your first year, I believe, that it's a whole week long of events or all around the world, our global community of people with chronic fatigue syndrome or ME, raising awareness, reminding people that the millions missing are still missing. It was a day before, I remember the millions missing day the last few years. And it's quite an important day for me because it was the first day that I properly came in contact with people who had ME. Although I was diagnosed about, 7 years ago, I had really limited my interaction with people with ME because anytime I went to like a support group once, and it was full of sick people, and I didn't go back. I didn't enjoy it. Even though, you know, on occasions, one of the reasons I couldn't go back if I'd wanted to was because I was too ill to actually make the journey to a support meeting. But no, I didn't want to identify with the sick people in the room, so I didn't go back to the support meeting. So I really, really deliberately limited my interaction with people with ME. The more I read, the more I understood about my illness. The more I kind of didn't want to be reminded that I had an illness that really is pretty crap. And, you know, look ahead here to our chat with Katie King coming up. She talks very honestly, very frankly, very real about this illness. So that's coming up. And I didn't want to be reminded that I was one of those people. So I didn't interact with people with ME that much. Whenever I moved back to Northern Ireland, circumstances forced my hand. I couldn't work anymore, and therefore I couldn't pay the rent in the south of England, which was pretty expensive where I was living. We moved back to Northern Ireland. It coincided with the millions missing, one of the first millions missing events, and I thought, seeing as we were in the area, it was at the City Hall in Belfast. I thought I would drop by. It wasn't at the City Hall, actually. It was at Stormont, our seat of erstwhile government. It was there. So I thought we would pop by. And it was interesting, my first experience of ME Awareness Day, of the Millions Missing event day, because I turned up and there it was organized. You know, there was the row of shoes to represent the people missing, and I left a pair of shoes and left a note on it. But there was, you know, there was people working with MPs. We were at the seat of Northern Irish government, so there were MPs at that time coming and going, MPs, you know, government representatives, working there at the time, because we did have a government at that time. There was, you know, people who had ME with their Millions Missing t-shirts were liaising with those government officials. There was people with ME with Millions Missing t-shirts manning stalls. There was people giving out information. There was people just chatting to people. And I was, I think, I didn't stay long. I was quite, you know, it was quite a bit of a shock to the system. I think it had been a long day anyway. I think I'd made the crazy decision to go to IKEA that day. So I was really struck by, it was busy and organized, and that meant there was people with ME being busy and organized on that day, being kind of, you know, working and organized. They had their leaflets, they had their t-shirts, they were liaising with politicians. And that really struck a chord with me, because I think, as I've mentioned before, I used to work in the non-profit sector, and all that kind of stuff is, you know, very familiar to me. And it was really neat to see people with ME doing what I used to do to some extent, you know, elements of what I would be very comfortable doing. So that really kind of resonated with me, and in many ways, my annual interaction with people with ME at the Millions Missing events inspired this gave me the confidence to turn the red light on and begin this podcast, because the more I interacted with these people who were ill, who had my illness, who were still, even though it may have been, you know, it was the one day of the year and they were maybe more visible, but I knew in the background they were running websites, they were, you know, organizing help for their fellow sufferers, they were running a community, offering support. They were running monthly support meetings and setting all that up. It really inspired me that you know, I can have some existence that lies somewhere between my old life and the new reality, because I saw other people doing that in an environment where I thrive. I'm comfortable, you know. I know a lot of people's biggest nightmare would be public speaking. I know that's, you know, whenever people talk about some of the biggest fears, it's public speaking. For me, I'm most comfortable behind a microphone. I'm most comfortable representing or you know, you can look at it two ways. One way, as I was chatting to Katie King about, yes, whenever we had our chat, one way might be you can look at it as doing service for others, you know, and I'm very comfortable and happy and grateful for the opportunity to do that. Another side of it is I'm very comfortable, you know, being the center of attention, as we've said before, you know. Some people aren't comfortable with that. I am. It's where I feel pretty good. So whichever way you want to look at it, or halfway, meet me halfway and we'll say I'm an all right person with a big ego or something. I don't know. It's silly. That's a silly tangent. Anyway, the point is, the Millions Missing Awareness Days inspired me to start this podcast, to reminded me that even though I have this illness, this life-changing illness, no doubt about it, it didn't mean I had to give up my entire old life, and that there were still elements, skills, abilities, talents, and experience that I had gained in those years of working in the nonprofit sector that I could use in this new life. So I'll actually always be grateful for the people I met and the people who organized the Millions Missing Days in the past. So that brings us up to today and the start of ME CFS Awareness Week. I hope you are able to interact in some way with your community, your ME community, and the ME community and the outside world at large. I hope you're able to interact in some way. I hope you've got your story out there, or you're maybe able to attend an event. I'm going to be attending cheaper. So I think I've got like three events coming this week, which is going to be tiring. It is. But, you know, it's going to be a full throttle week. I'll pay for it afterwards. And I'm going to meet some great people and get some good chats for the show as well. So that's cool and exciting. I'm really looking forward to that. But so that's my experience of ME Awareness Week. Get in touch and let me know yours when the week is over. See how it's worked out for you. And I hope we raise the awareness in the wider community on this week. And, you know, not just for this week. This show will continue and continue for as long as it needs to or it's able to. So I hope to, in my own little way, continue to raise awareness for the other weeks of the year. So without any further delay, and that's a little longer than I intended, but I think it's a nice thing to say on this week. Katie King, I met on Twitter, and we started chatting, and she is an author of, we talk about one of her books, Little Eden, which I am halfway through at the moment and thoroughly enjoying. Got in touch, and I'm really glad that she was able to find the time to have a chat on the show. I am, as I've said before, incredibly grateful for all the guests who've come on the show. And I am just getting to meet, I'm spoiled because I'm getting to meet some of the most fabulous people who just, you know, if you're ever interested in coming on the show, and I hope you are, I always tell people, look, it's just a nice meandering little chat. You know, it's just a little chat. We can edit things out. It's all grand. It's, you know, just relax. It's just a wee chat. That's all. It's a little chat over a coffee. And I say that, and people continue to blow me away with their unprepared, beautiful insights into life with this illness. And Katie King is exactly the same. Some of the things she says coming up, it broke my heart, it blew my mind, and it was just fabulous. I won't do any more preamble, and I'll come back at the end and wrap up. But for now, this is Katie King, and all the information, as always, that she mentions in the chat will be in the show notes. But for now, enjoy my chat with Katie King. All right, Katie King, how are you doing?
Hi, Paddy. Yeah, good, thank you. Well, at the moment, who knows? 10 minutes ago, I may not have been, and in 10 minutes' time, I might not be. You know how it goes.
I mean, absolutely. I don't know if you've had a chance to listen yet, but I did a whole episode last week on answering the question, how are you doing? It is... It shouldn't be that difficult to answer, but it genuinely is for us, isn't it?
I mean, if anyone asks me, I usually just go, fine, thanks, because who wants to hear about it, really?
And that's the thing, isn't it? I think we're not that much different from the rest of the human race, obviously, in wanting to protect our loved ones or not be too filled with self-pity or present this an idea of self-pity, but... It's difficult. I find that the people who know me well ask me the question twice. You know, they're like, how are you doing? And yes. I'm like, yeah, fine. How are you doing, though?
Yeah. Yeah. I've got a best friend, and I'll tell her the truth. I mean, I won't say a big long essay on it, but I will tell her if I'm not good. And obviously, I don't know if you found this, but you end up with a very small number of friends because... you just don't see people enough, and you just have to say no to most invites and cancel everything. And so it's really those people in my life who are compassionate enough to put up with a friend that they can't really rely on. I think as a friend, I go all out to be the best friend I can be, but, you know, I've forgotten an example. I would go to my goddaughter's ballet show on Sunday.
Oh, wow.
And I really, really want to go, but I'm absolutely dreading it. The stress inside me about how am I going to cope on Sunday is I have to keep pushing it back down because it's like, all right, we'll just see how we are on Sunday. And my goddaughter's beautiful. She's the light of my life. But I've had to say to her, you know, if Auntie Kate has to leave halfway through, you won't be upset, will you? Like, you shouldn't have to say these things.
No, absolutely. And I really identify with that fear. I mean, like you, that's on Saturday, and I've got an event happening on the 26th of May. And I know already that Maggie, my wife, isn't going to be able to go with me, but another friend is. But I'm already dreading that this other friend won't be able to help me negotiate queues or anything the way that Maggie would. And I'm already anxious about it. It's crazy.
It is, but I think, you know, being with certain people is okay, and then other people, you are just so aware that you're going to have to dig deep, and you're going to have to either be really honest and a bit embarrassed, or you're just going to have to get through that time, and you know the consequence afterwards. You'll probably be in bed for 3 days. You know, I remember one incident years ago when I was really bad, when I was just really hardly ever going out. A friend of mine, I went to a craft show with her, and there were stalls all the way around, and we got about halfway around, and she just turned to me and went, "We need to go and get a cup of tea now, don't we?" And I just looked at her and I went, "How did you know?" And she said, "I felt your energy drop." She said, "I was stood next to you and I felt it just disappear." And that is how it feels to me. It's like someone pulls the plug from inside at any moment, and that's it. And I was just so relieved, you know, when you always want to hug her and go, "Thank you, God." It's just like, yes, I do. I need to go and sit down and have a cup of tea. I do find a piece of cake tends to give me an extra half hour.
First top tip of the day. I like that. I can get down with that.
Well, yeah, if you're out and about with your friends and you're feeling really like you can't go on, cup of tea and a piece of cake, it'll give you that extra boost.
Like that, thank you. But that is beautiful, your friend saying that. That's genuinely touching. I love hearing stories like that whenever we've got friends. I've got a few friends like that too, and obviously my wife Maggie as well. She knows, she can tell. You're right, it's that energy. It leaves the room, you know. And I think, you know, obviously you come across as having just met you, but you come across as, you know, a nice, bubbly, happy, joyful person. So I bet whenever that goes, it is noticeable, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't even know always that I'm doing it. Like my other friend, my best friend, says there are times when I just stop mid-sentence.
Wow.
And I don't even know I'm doing it. And when I was really bad, she said, you know, you would just stop talking, and you'd be like, okay. But I say, oh my God, I didn't even know that. And
that's
so, you know, you can see that you're switching off, that you can't take any more information. And so, it, you know, people who can tolerate that about someone else, I think, you know, they are such amazing people. And funnily enough, most of my friends are either complementary therapists or nurses.
Ah, right.
So I think they just are the type of people who know how to deal with people with illness. They're not frightened by it, you know?
Yeah. Oh, good people. Good people and gratitude. Yeah,
good people. I'm lucky. I've, you know, and I had my major relapse was in 2012, and I didn't really see anyone for 2 years because I was just in bed 24/7. And the friends that were there after that, I knew, you know, they was keepers, if you know what I mean. They had lost me for 2 years, and yet they were still there waiting at the end of it to say, you know. And some of them would be like, come on, come out for a cup of tea, we'll just be half an hour, I'll pick you up. I mean, I've got one friend, she won't let me drive even now. She's like, no, I'm driving. And he's like, oh, you're so sweet.
And I think that's it. I was speaking to a friend on the phone earlier today about kind of she was talking about maybe making life changes, and as far as her work's concerned, and I was talking about the life changes that were forced upon me. I think we can look at it that way, as it's not easy, but it is the easier option, I think, to look at these things as not that, oh, jeepers, the action of even driving a car would tire you out, versus, isn't that fabulous? I've got somebody who won't let me drive. because they care that much about me. It's hard to look at life that way, but it does make it a lot more enjoyable and bearable to focus on that gratitude rather than the frustration and resentment, doesn't it?
I think this is it. You know, I want to be the one that drives. I mean, now I don't have enough money to have my own car, so I'm really grateful that my dad shares his car with me and he pays for the petrol. So in a lot of ways, you know, driving is not something I can just do anyway for lots of reasons. But, you know, yeah, if you're going out for an hour, that's such a big deal. An hour is a big deal to me. And so if somebody picks me up and drives me and brings me back, that hour is doable.
Yes.
You know, because I haven't had the bit at either end. Another person, I know, a friend of mine who lives a bit further away, I drive so far and then I park at this garden centre and she picks me up
and takes her
to her house, so that I've only actually had a 20-minute drive rather than a 40-minute drive.
Oh, that's what you do. You are surrounded by good people, by the sounds of it.
Well, I really am, and I think I try to give a lot back, but I know that, you know, they are super people. They are like unbelievable people. And actually, because I've written a novel in the last couple of years, and the heroine Sophie has chronic fatigue, ME, because I wanted to try and help raise awareness within the general public. So the book is not about ME, because that would just be totally depressing. who's going to want to read that one? So, you know, it's a really thrilling, exciting novel. Anyone could read it and enjoy it. And you know, people have been enjoying it. But what I thought was amazing was even these friends who really try and understand me have actually said, I understand you better now from reading the novel. And I have noticed even more, they're trying to help me even more than they were before. And it just shows, you know, that even people who were trying to understand, they still are so far away from being able to really, really get how it feels to have ME. And how could they? I mean, how can you expect anyone to fully empathize with someone if they've never been through it? It's like, you can't empathize fully with someone who's nearly starving to death or is having chemotherapy or whatever it is. If you haven't experienced it, you're always guessing what it might be like, and you can't get fully into the head and the heart of that person.
Yeah. And I think the novel you're referring to here is Little Eden.
Little Eden,
which I'm very happy to say I am. I'm working my way through at the moment. I'm thoroughly enjoying. Yes, I am. Yeah. And I'm genuinely enjoying it as well.
Oh,
and I had highlighted a few passages about the heroine Sophie, actually, because in that you do describe me a couple of times. And what's quite nice is you have people describing it to children or young people.
So
you get to describe it. You use the analogy, the metaphor of the mobile phone battery being on low and needing charged. And I think it is absolutely fantastic that you have Sophie in that book as somebody who has chronic fatigue or ME. Oh, by the way, what do you call your illness?
Well, I call it ME, but I only actually have a CFS diagnosis because where I live in East Riding, they weren't giving out ME diagnosis. They only will give you a CFS. So in the book, in the first book, I've called it CFS, but I'm actually in the middle of writing book two because it's a series of novels, and I am actually using ME in that one. I didn't know whether to say that Sophie had ME in book one or whether to say she had chronic fatigue. And I don't know why I just picked CFS. I thought maybe more people might grasp that, because I mean, I can't even pronounce what ME actually stands for.
No, I do a show on it and I gave up on episode 3, you know?
And then you're like, can you picked a, I mean, you know, things like it's named after somebody, a lot of diseases, aren't they? Couldn't we have just said that simply?
Yeah.
And I hate it if someone says, I mean, I don't talk about it a great deal, so I don't have to do it very often. They go, oh, what does ME stand for? And you go, oh, no. yeah. And then you just, like, you're making it up even more.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
But so, yeah, that's... I think with the novel, I kind of didn't put too much in there because obviously it's not about ME. But the theory behind it was that I from my perspective, I don't feel like a heroine in my life because I've had this for over 25 years. So I haven't really had a life. And my dreams from when I was a teenager have not happened, except I have at least published a novel, which is one of my early childhood dreams. But, you know, I don't think we feel that we can make a contribution a lot of the time. Our self-value, our self-confidence just hits rock bottom. I mean, when I'm in bed 24/7, I just want to die because I just think I'm just so useless, you know. I'm a burden and all the rest of it. And with the novel, I just wanted to show that with the right support, we can make a difference. And actually that interview with Jess, she was saying about having people supporting you. I do live with my elderly parents now, so I do have support. But prior to that, I was completely on my own and I had to pay my own bills and earn my own money. And I didn't have that support. And I used to think that if I gave in, I would be the victim and I would have to admit there was something wrong. So it's a big deal for me to publish the novel because it's basically me coming out in public, because I never used to speak about this. So I wouldn't have done this interview with you. Even last year, I wouldn't have been able to do it because I didn't want to be that person. I wanted to fight back all the time. But I think by writing the novel, I showed that Sophie has to accept her illness, and yet the friends and family around her can help her still participate in life and still be part of the action, even though then she's in bed 80% of the time.
Absolutely. And she makes a contribution. She participates that way. And, you know, I think it's terribly sad what some of the things she just said there. But at the same time, I do massively identify with it, you know. And I think it's wonderful that you have made that impact on the world. You know, you've put your flag in the sand and said, I am here. I was here. I will be here with the book. And it's wonderful that you're in the process of creating the second one as well, the next one.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason I'm able to do it is because I don't have to pay any bills because I live with my parents now. And it does take me a long time. You know, there are weeks where I never type a word, you know, and then I'll have a good patch and I'll get as much done as I can. And it gives me a place to escape to. It gives me a reason to keep going. And hopefully the readers are going to want to escape to Little Eden as well, because it's not just about having ME. You know, I think everybody needs somewhere to escape to. And that's why people do read books or watch movies. But one of the problems I was having is that because I'm a complementary therapist and have ME, I couldn't find novels where I actually identified with anyone. It was like, you know, well, I can't do that, or well, that couldn't be me, or you know. And also I don't like depressing novels. I don't want to read about you know, some of these detectives who are alcoholics and,
yeah,
you know, depressed and such, all that Scandi noir. It's not my bag, you know. I want to be cheered up a bit. So it was really a case of wanting to write something that I would want to read, so that I could go, oh, yeah, that could be me, you know.
Well, absolutely, yeah. But I can see I was thinking about this morning and then last week as well, whenever we were agreeing to chat together. And I was thinking that, no, we're not really represented in books or films that much, but I suppose that there is a problem in that, because the narrative, the story must proceed, but because of the illness, it would have to proceed without us. You can't have
Yeah, you can't, like you were saying, Indiana Jones. You can't write. You can't have Emmy and be Indiana Jones, can you?
No. Well, you can't even have. You can't have Elizabeth Bennet turning up at the house and Darcy's in bed for most of the novel. You know, that doesn't quite work.
It doesn't, does it? And can you imagine the other way around? You know, he said, "Oh yeah, I'm falling in love with a woman who never gets out of bed." Yeah. Right, okay. I mean, I was actually writing as a really lovely lady who I never met, just like you, just being so generous. She is a book blogger, and she's going to put me on her blog next week to help with Emmy Awareness Week, and she's called The Haphazardous Hippo, is her blog. And I was saying to her about, you know, not being able to really write a book, a novel about someone with ME, but there is a short story called The Yellow Wallpaper, which is quite famous in some respects. And it's about a woman who lives in an attic. And I won't spoil it for people in case they want to read it. It's called The Yellow Wallpaper. And basically it just takes place in this attic, and she is in this attic and that is it. But it's kind of scary. It's kind of creepy. And I just thought that would really be the only way you could do it, is to pull off a real humdinger like The Yellow Wallpaper. But I'm not that clever.
Well, that's book number three. You've got to, you know, you're working on number two at the moment.
I think for a lot of us, it's finding a reason to keep going.
Yeah.
And you've got to invent that reason, I believe, because, you know, I couldn't have children because of ME, so I've not got that. I've not got a partner because of ME. So it's a very isolated, lonely life, which I know a lot of your listeners will identify with. And I think if you don't invent your own reasons, you can really spiral. And I've been down there. I've been to hell and back, you know.
Yeah.
But I also really want to get across to people that they're much braver than they probably think they are, because the relapses, you know, I've had a lot in my lifetime because I spent so long pretending I didn't have it, so I just kept relapsing. That to come back from one relapse takes a heck of a lot of mental and emotional strength. But yes, to come back from multiple relapses over your whole lifetime, you know, people think they're weak, they're a failure because they're ill. And I would say to your listeners, is no, you are stronger than any Olympic athlete, because the strength that it takes to keep going when every single minute of every single day is a struggle, and then it can just get even worse than that, and you have to come back from that over and over again. You know, people should be giving us gold medals, do you know what I mean? But again, it wouldn't look too good, would it? Like the Emmy Olympics. I think that would work somehow, dear.
Yeah, we might not sell out a stadium with that one, but we can, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
You used the fantastic line, and that was absolutely beautiful, what you just said. Thank you for sharing that. I think that's a wonderful thing to hear, and I think people will really be heartened by that. Another thing I think would be really useful for people listening, certainly for me anyway, is you referred there to you did damage to yourself, or you persisted because you pretended you didn't have ME for like 20 of the 25 years.
Yeah.
So tell me about that. What do you mean by that?
Well, looking back now, you know, I wasn't a child who had tons of energy, but I wouldn't class myself as having had ME as a child. Mm-hmm. I couldn't really understand why my friends all seemed to be able to go for longer than me. But I'm not very tall. I'm only 5 foot, and I used to be really quite thin. Not anymore. I'm in my 40s now. So I kind of put it down to, you know, people go, oh, well, you've only got little legs, you know, or you're only little. So you just kind of think, okay, you know, my friends are all taller and look a bit more robust than me. It must be that. And then when I turned 19, I started to get the most awful back pain, absolutely terrible. And I went to the doctors about it quite a few times, but it was just told to get lost, really. And they just said, oh, it's because you've been studying, because I went to university. So they just blamed it on sitting at a desk. But this got progressively worse. So I started to suffer with depression because of the pain. And I wasn't even given any pain management advice, no, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I graduated, I had this crash and I was in bed for 6 months. And the stupid thing was, looking back, my parents didn't really do anything about it. And I didn't really do anything about it. It was like, oh, okay. You know, and you're looking back and going, what was that? Why didn't anyone go, I think we should go to the hospital?
Yeah.
But it was just like, okay. Anyway, I kind of got a bit better again. And my friend was going to Australia. So she said, do you want to come with me? And you look back and go, what was I thinking? So I just went, yeah, okay. It was when, I don't know if everyone remembers, but when the building societies were being bought out, if you had some money in the bank, you got some payout, some shares money, shares, yeah. And I I'd been with the Halifax since I was a kid, so I got a little bit of money and I sold the shares and spent it to go to Australia. But in Australia, I actually felt quite a bit better because it was really warm and sunny, and I am better in the heat, as probably most people are. Not really big heat, but, you know, better than British weather. And I only had to work as a secretary, sort of on and off as a temp, so it wasn't strenuous. But again, I was thinking, why is everyone else, you know, able to just get up at 6 o'clock and do all these crazy things and then party all night? And I'm like, oh, God, I'm going to go to bed. So still didn't really twig. And then I came back from that and I relapsed again. And I think that was when I thought, okay, this is slightly weird. But at that time, ME wasn't really a thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was yuppie flu, I think, was really the thing it was called back then. And I was seeing a chiropractor because the NHS just wouldn't help me with my back. And my dad ended up paying for me to see a chiropractor. And he was the one who said, you might have this ME. I was like, okay. So I kind of looked into it. But obviously the doctors that I went to see over the next sort of 15 years just kept going, get lost, really,
yeah,
in so many words. What sort of they said, because it turns out I've got congenital spine misalignments, and that's what was causing the pain. But the NHS hasn't wanted to know about any of that. So I had to just pretend like it was okay, because what can you do? You know, mm-hmm. what was I going to do? Nobody would agree that I was ill. I need financial help from the state. And even if I did, I didn't have a recognised disability. So what could I do? I had to earn a living and try and pretend like it was all okay. I mean, I realised I could only work part-time initially. I used to come home and throw up because I was so tired.
Goodness
and
me.
I would sit in this chair that I had and just wish that someone would cut my head off, because I was in so much pain in my back and my neck. But you start to learn to live with it. That is who you are. It's like, well, what can I do? No one's helping me. No one believes me. So then I got got offered a full-time job and thought, yeah, let's do that.
Fantastic.
Oh, God, big mistake. So I did that for about a year. And then, of course, what happened? Yeah. Massive crash. That took me about 18 months to get over. And luckily, at that point, I did have a partner that I lived with. And he supported me during that time. And it was then that I was like, okay, I can't hold down a job. This is really obvious. So I started to look into learning complementary therapies, because I knew that the NHS was just a no-go area and I had to do something, because the chiropractor also said that I could be in a wheelchair by the time I was 40. So wow. I was just like, I was suffering with manic depression. I was so tired and I was in all this pain. So I was like, right, this has got it, I've got to do it. I've got to do something positive. So I learned over a period of the following years, various complementary therapies. And that in itself wasn't easy. You know, I didn't really have the money. I used to reuse tea bags and stuff like that because I was paying for these courses. I never went on holidays. I've always bought my clothes in secondhand shops, you know, all that. But it was like, well, what else can I do? And I think probably a lot of your listeners now are thinking, yeah, well, it's up to us, isn't it? At the moment, it is up to us. And you have to find that fighting spirit, because if you give in, what is that? You know, I'm sorry to say it, but suicide is about your only option if you're not going to try to get through each day somehow. And I found that dividing the day up really helps. So I would say to myself, I'd wake up and think, oh God, not again. And then I'd go, right, okay, look, let's just go downstairs and get some breakfast. This is me talking in my head. I would actually say these things to myself in my head. I'd go, let's go down and get some breakfast. Just get out of bed. Okay, just move the quilt. Just get out of bed. Please just get out of bed. So the other part of me like, okay, we'll get out of bed. Right, okay. Right, we'll just have breakfast and then we'll see how we feel. So I'd eat my breakfast and then I'd be like, right, do we think we can get till 11 o'clock on lunchtime? Do you think we can? And then the other part of me would be like, okay, we'll try. We'll get there. Lunchtime comes. And at the time, you're going to laugh at this, Murder, She Wrote was on at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And my next step was, after lunch, was get to Murder, She Wrote. And then you can sit down and we'll watch Murder, She Wrote. And I used to have clients coming, you know, for the therapies and stuff, but I never booked anyone in at that time so that I could watch Murder, She Wrote.
It's the Jessica Fletcher hour, you know it.
Yeah. And the thing is that I actually ended up going to see Angela Lansbury live, which was a huge day out for me, and I relapsed after that as well because I had to go to London. But I actually wrote her a letter and thanked her, and bless her, she sent me a signed program.
Oh, wow.
And stuff, and I was like, oh, but I know she probably thought I was a nutter, but I just really wanted to tell her that she'd basically kept me alive for years. Because
oh, that's
like,
fantastic.
Once I got to Jessica Fletcher and Angela Lansbury, I knew I'd make it to bedtime. So, yeah. And then I'd have my tea and then I'd be like, okay, let's just make it to bed. And then I'd get into bed and say, right, let's just make it till the morning. And that is really how I got through my life.
Wow, that is...
doing that.
That's incredible. That's absolutely incredible. It is devastatingly relatable, I think, for me. And I'm sure there are thousands of people listening to this now. Thousands. Who can relate to that? Mm. And that's absolutely awful, you know.
Love to put a positive spin on it, and I would love to be able to say to people, you can find a cure, you can get better. But I am now 46 and I have tried every complementary therapy there is. I've learned quite a few of them myself. I've had acupuncture, homeopathy, reflexology, physio, everything you can imagine, and I would say that has kept me alive, because I learned self-hypnosis to deal with the pain. I meditate every day. I'm now not depressed, because I've found that spirituality, and I don't mean religion, I mean spirituality, has given me access to healing energies that will keep me going throughout the day. And I would urge everyone to at least try and find something that keeps them going. But I also can, hand on heart, say, if you're looking for a cure, I'm sorry, but if you have chronic fatigue for some other reason, then yes, you could probably heal yourself out of it. But I think with ME, whatever it is, we are just having to wait till the scientific community can come up with something. And I've been through all that. Ooh, think positively. Ooh, you know, it's all your fault because you're making yourself ill because you're negative. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of that out there. There is so much out there. And if you move into the spiritual world, the New Age world, the religious world, whatever it might be for you, there is so much of that. Is you don't talk about it, because if you talk about it, you're identifying with it, and if you're identifying with it, that's why you're ill, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried all that. I learned CBT, NLP, EFT. I've learned to be a counselor. I've done inner child work. I've done past life. I've done, oh God, what I haven't done worth doing, Jeremy. And I know now, hands on heart, and I think that's probably why I've been able to come out in public, is I can now, after all these years, hand on heart, go, it is not me. I am not making this up. Because if I was, I'd have been cured by now. You know, there isn't anything I haven't tried. I am healthy. I know that Jess was saying how healthy she is. And I said to somebody a while back, I'm probably one of the healthiest people you'll meet, and yet one of the illest.
Yes. Yeah.
And that is, I think, one of the problems with ME is that I don't look ill necessarily. I might look tired, but it's such a strange illness. It doesn't really seem to... It doesn't matter how healthy you are. It's still there, you know? And it'll still... It's ridiculous. I mean, I went through my 30s. I did all that food sensitivity, okay? Because it's like everyone says, oh, it's probably a food sensitivity. That's why you're so tired, okay? Uh-huh, so you're sensitive to wheat, sugar, dairy. I spent 5 years not eating wheat, dairy or sugar, and it was the most bloody miserable time of my life. And it made no difference whatsoever. I'm not saying that, you know, there are people out there who will have chronic fatigue from food sensitivities. That is a genuine thing.
Yeah.
And for someone listening who hasn't maybe tried that, well, it, you know, maybe give it a go, because if it is that and it isn't any, good God, you know, yay.
Yeah.
You know, if any listener out there thinks, can rule out absolutely every other reason why they might have chronic fatigue, then please, please, please do that. Because you do not want it to be ME. But if it is ME, and you know that it is, then I think acceptance has to be the way to go. And I pray to God that listeners have somebody who will, like I have my parents, but I mean, I won't have them for much longer. They're both, my dad's 90. Somebody who might put them up, you know, in a house and feed them and look after them. Because, you know... We are waiting on the scientists, basically. And I think that's why ME Awareness and all the wonderful people who are working for ME Action and all the other ME groups, we need to shout, and we need to shout louder and louder and louder, because it's that Petri dish that's going to make the difference.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well said. But in the meantime... As you say, if somebody has that, the ME/CFS, you said earlier about people being the, you know, the champions, the heroes, the people who've overcome. And, you know, just what you said there, it's absolutely clear that, you know, you are one of those people, aren't you? You know, you've come through so much and you've gained the requisite level of acceptance. You don't have a choice, but you know, oftentimes in our lives we don't have a choice, but we still won't accept things, you know. But you've got a level of acceptance now, it seems, that has allowed you to be that hero. You've written your book, you're sharing your experience with the outside world, and you're working on your second book, you know, and you're doing it from in a way that works for you, and I think that's absolutely fantastic. You know, I really do. That gives me a lot of hope a lot of happiness with that, you know?
I mean, I don't want to be the negative person, but on the other hand, I always believe that you have to be realistic.
Yeah.
And so for the listeners out there, I'd say, yes, every day is a struggle. And unless you have chronic fatigue for some other reason, you're going to be waiting. So while you're waiting... You have to find out what's going to get you through the day, because it might be a bit late for some of us. But, you know, if like that new development just this week, you know, about them maybe finding the diagnostic blood test.
Yes.
I mean, you know, you don't know whether that's going to come to anything or not, because a lot, but if it did, you know, if someone out there's quite young or they've only had it for a short time, then do not give in. Do you know what I mean? Because maybe help is on its way. And I also had to say to people, because it is something I think we have to be really open about. I think suicide is something that goes on. And if we pretend it isn't that bad, then we're not being realistic. And I know that there will be a few listeners out there who have sat like I have with the bottle of pills, maybe the knife, maybe stood on the bridge. But every time I was going to do it, I just thought about all the people that would be so upset. I also used to think, I wouldn't want to be the person who finds me. Do you know what I mean? I wouldn't want to put anyone through that. I wouldn't want to be the policewoman or the doctor or whoever. Because I'm always like thinking about other people. So I'm like, oh God, that'd be awful. Oh, I couldn't do that to somebody. And I'd sort of dig myself back out of that pit. And I never thought that I would get to this point where actually I'm actually glad I'm still alive. So I'm like, oh, thank God I didn't do it. Because for all the really bad times, I think there are also these times that you go through where there is still hope and that you can make a difference. And if you can try and help one person every day, whether it be by tweeting something or just by even praying for somebody, or just, you know, from your bed, just pray for someone for 2 minutes. And you're sending good energy out there. Or, you know, you might be able to send a thank you card to somebody, or just, I don't know, knit them a scarf or something. It doesn't have to be a big thing. But if you've thought about somebody else that day and tried to help them in some way, no matter how small, then that's worth it that day, isn't it? You know, that's how I see it. That day was worth it.
And I think you've definitely accomplished you've ticked that box for yourself today, Katie King. I think in coming on the show and sharing that, that's absolutely beautiful and something that I'll certainly take away with me and remember whenever I'm down. You've done yours today.
And I hope with the novel as well, I hope that, well, I know so, because I know that a few people have read it and said it's really helped. And so I think, right, you know, I've got to keep going, because even if I've only got 5 readers, it's like, you know, I've got more than that, but you know what I mean? I hope I've got more than that. But you know what I mean? It's like, I'm here for a reason, and that reason is to help other people. And actually this acceptance, it's funny because I know I'm waffling here, but there's one person I know who still doesn't really want to come out with the ME in public so much. And I can totally relate to that. But on the other hand, since I have come out and decided to speak, decided to write, decided to go hands up, yes, the liberation, I can't explain it. It's amazing. Because I always thought I don't want to identify with loads of the people with ME. God, that sounds awful, but do you know what I mean? You don't want to be
in a
group of ill people.
Absolutely.
You want to be enjoying, like, being out there going, woo, I'm all right. But actually, the people that I've come across, they're not all kind of, oh, yeah, it's really bad and being really, really like that. They're like, right, I'm trying this and I'm doing that. And there are artists and poets and amazing people with ME. And you just think, yeah, actually, you know, I can speak out about it, because it isn't the fact that I am only my illness. There are so many other aspects to me, and everyone with ME has a million other aspects to them. But the ME is so overwhelming that I think we can forget that, and we can sometimes imagine that that's all people will see. If we put our hands up and went, I've got ME, that suddenly it will be almost like they forget even what you're called. They'll just go, that's the person with ME.
I do.
But no, I think if anyone's on the edge of wondering whether to come out or not, listening to this, I would say please, please do, because the more of us that shout, the more we would be likely to be heard by the governments and the medical profession. If you're not ready, then okay, you know, that's okay too. And if you're already, you know, a big voice, then thank you, because, you know, you've inspired me to use my voice as well.
Absolutely, yeah. I completely identify with that. I had an incredibly similar experience to you in that I didn't want to identify with the ME community for the longest time because they were sick, and you know, but ever since I have, as you say, you know, you can do it for the community, you can do it for the greater good, or you can be self-centered like I am, and you know, do it for yourself. But ever since I have, you know, come out explicitly, you're absolutely right. There is a massive liberation, and it's not, I'm no longer, I think the biggest identifier, the biggest labeler of me being an ME person was myself, you know?
Yes.
But now that it's out there in the ether, I can participate actually more, because everything has that understanding that Paddy has ME. So thing, he might adjust things slightly, or like, you know, with your ballet recital on Sunday, you know, you're hoping to make it, you might not be there the whole thing, but you know, there's an understanding now, but it doesn't need to be explicitly stated every single time, and you don't need to carry the burden of letting people down, because if it's out there, then you can participate to the level that you're able to, and that's fabulous, because the amount of energy that I previously would have wasted on the stress of what will other people think, or will I make it, that's now dissipated, so I can use that excess energy to stay an extra 15 minutes.
Yeah, definitely. And also, I think it's partly the timing, because, you know, if I'd said this 20 years ago, no one was listening. There was no one else there. Whereas now on Twitter, you know, Facebook, social media in general, there are other people there, and even if someone out there just sets up a Twitter account and even just browses like once a week or something, maybe just leaves a comment now and again, you're adding, you know, to the voice, to the collective voice. And, you know, what you're doing is absolutely amazing, that you're taking your energy to do something like this, which does take a lot of energy. You know, I can feel myself flagging now. and you're sort of like, you know, that you're bothered to do this. You don't have to do this, do you? You know, you don't have to interview people and edit it all and put it on social media. You're doing it because you, as well, you want to make a difference and you want to help, because what else is there at the end of the day?
Absolutely.
If we don't help each other and help other people, there's nothing really else worth doing, in my book anyway.
I completely agree. And I think, and we will wrap up as we're both running out of spoons, but Jack, a guest that I had on back in February, Jack Croxall, who was also an author, he described the whole Twitterverse as an echo chamber. You know, he said that you're dropping those things in, and even if you are just putting a couple of little sentences in once in a while, you're contributing to that mass of experience that will reach the tipping point where it can't be ignored, and it will be a resource for the people behind the petri dish, as you said.
Yeah.
So I think that's absolutely true. So talking of social media then, how can people follow you, follow your work, and get in touch with you?
Well, if you Google Katie King, I usually come up sort of quite high up the list. And on Twitter, I'm Katie King, or Katie King Books on pretty much everything. So that's Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, you know. And for my novel, if You can go on Amazon. It's on Amazon, iBooks, Google Play, Kobo, Nook, or all the ebook platforms. And if you type in Katie King, Little Eden, I should come up straight away. And please, everyone's welcome to follow me on Twitter, and I'll follow them back. And let's just make some noise. That's what I
Absolutely.
think.
I'll put, if you didn't catch all that, it'll be in the show notes. So if you want to just scroll down and find your show notes while you're listening to this podcast, all of the stuff Katie just referred to there will be there. So you can find links and click to it. Again, I'm reading Little Eden at the moment and I'm thoroughly enjoying it. So I do recommend it to folks. It's exactly as described. It's a nice break away. It's lovely escapism. It's very well written. And yeah, I'd recommend it to all you guys out there. And oh, more out, Pitt. What's the name of the blog? This is coming out Monday. So what's the name of the blog
Oh,
we can
the
look for
book
you on?
blogger lady is called the Haphazardous Hippo, and it's when you Google it, she's got this gorgeous little profile picture of this pink hippo with glasses on. It's really cute, but she has been amazing. She doesn't know me from Adam, and she just offered to help. And it's people like that you just think, wow,
Yeah.
there are so many wonderful people out there. But I think when you're in your bed 24/7, you forget that,
Absolutely. Yeah, you
Yeah.
do. You
But they're
do.
still out there, even if we're not out there, they are.
They are. They absolutely
Yeah.
are. And I'm very grateful for being able to do this because it brings me in contact with all these people. It's fabulous. There is a whenever you open the door slightly, there is actually a rich, sunshiny community out there, and I'm really grateful I opened that door
Yeah.
when I did. I really am.
Yeah.
All
Well,
right.
thank you, Paddy. Thank you so much. And it was a pleasure to talk to you. And I'd say what you're doing is amazing. So don't underestimate it. Gold
Oh,
medals. Gold medals coming your
you
way.
know my ego. I never would. I never would. Katie King, likewise, gold medal for you as well.
Oh, thank you.
And we'll maybe talk to you again whenever the next book's ready.
Yes. Please do, yeah. Hopefully it will be out by the end of the year, but that's if I don't have a big relapse.
Yeah.
Deadlines and MA, they don't go together, as everybody well know.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, when that time comes, we'll definitely have you
Yeah.
back on for our next
Brilliant.
chat.
Thank you.
Till then, thank you, Katie King. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, and that was my chat with Katie King. Again, so full of gratitude for her coming on and sharing her experience. Some real moving pieces there, and some real beautiful inspiration as well. So thank you, Katie, for coming on. Do check out Little Eden. As I say, I'm working my way through it slowly. You know how it is, reading an ME, much like deadlines, they don't go together that often. But I'm making my way through it, and I am, whenever I have the opportunity to read it, I'm thoroughly enjoying it. Fascinating what she said about I've never really considered or thought about coming out as somebody with ME, person with ME. There might be in show on that. Let's see how what if anything else comes up before next week. But otherwise, there might be something in that as well. Next week, we'll look at the responses you guys sent in about how you answer the question, how you're doing. I'll look at those as well next week and share some of those with you. But I think as we begin ME CFS Awareness Week, it's a bright, sunny, early May day over here in Northern Ireland. We'll head off and go out and raise awareness in our own way. And I hope that whatever you do this week, whoever you speak to, whatever events you're able to attend, if any, I hope that it all goes very well for you. And we continue raising awareness this week, but in the many weeks to come as well, as Katie said, while we wait for the people behind the Petri dish to get sufficient funding and evidence to make that big difference. So if you want to be like Katie and be fabulous on this show, then you can get in touch at Zero All About Me on Twitter, or It's Really Not All About Me itsnotallaboutme@gmail.com on email. There is a closed Facebook group. Just search It's Not All About Me podcast. And I think for this week, that's all about it, you know. Enjoy, if that's the right word, ME Awareness Week. Check out the Unrest documentary, I guess, if you haven't seen it before. I have to admit, I haven't seen it, but I'm going to a screening very soon as part of the ME Awareness festivities. So I'll be watching it for the first time. But yeah, whatever you do, I hope it doesn't take too many spoons and that you recover swiftly. So with that said, till next time, take care of yourselves and each other. Cheers.